Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew, and today's date is Wednesday, October 3rd, 2012, and here's a little look at what's coming up in tonight's edition.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, Rob Dew speaks with three-time Emmy Award-winning journalist Amber Lyon about the censorship of her documentary filmmaking. Plus, why are there only two candidates in the presidential debates? All that and more on the InfoWars Nightly News.
We start off tonight with a pathetic attempt by the BBC to create a reality conspiracy show. And basically what they're trying to do is appeal to the young children and tell them that, hey, here's some older people that think, you know, there's conspiracy theories and that the government wants to kill people. And we're going to prove that they're wrong by building straw man arguments and not letting the people who have information talk, or at least editing that information out. And this is all based on a Paul Joseph Watson interview he did with one John Scobie of We Are Change Birmingham. And the title of the article is 7/7 Bombings, Conspiracy Road Trip Debunked. John was one of the members of the crew. You could see him there on the left. And they go out with comedian Andrew Maxwell. And they take the kids on a five-day trip driving around looking at different locations and basically trying to prove to them that, yes, it is possible that, you know, some Al-Qaeda-backed men went in and bombed some subway trains and a bus, and they weren't running drills on that same day. That's all crazy coincidence. And so we're going to go to a clip now. These are basically excerpts out of the interview that Paul did with John Scobie from We Are Change Birmingham. Let's go to that clip right now.
I would say that it wasn't an investigation into the truth. It was an attack, a reality show to attack people who have views which don't agree with the government.
They've changed their tactics, kind of, because the old BBC conspiracy shows from 5-6 years ago were about the BBC going out and trying to attack the conspiracy theories. Now they're doing it through so-called conspiracy theorists, because nobody trusts the BBC to do it directly. So in getting people to recant their ideas, the viewer, you know, sees it and thinks, oh, they really believed in this, now they don't, that must mean it's not true. And that's the process that we saw with the program. So just go through some of the things that they edited out.
First of all, I will say that they changed the narration of the show and actually would cut elements, you know, cut 2 minutes from here or 30 seconds from there, put them together, and in the show it made it look like it was all part of the same conversation. They did put a load of us, footage of us eating and footage of us on the bus having a row, which they had previously promised wouldn't go into the programme. What I said, which I thought was important, was around Operation Gladio, which of course was a NATO stay-behind army after the Second World War, which was, you know, we now know it has been declassified through the ex-Italian Prime Minister, etc., that they blew up buses, trains, you know, were involved with blowing up schools and things like that. And so this is historical fact, this is historical record, this is not conspiracy theory, and there is huge amounts of documentation to back this all up. And I said to the researchers, the cameraman, the director, this is really important. The only reason I'm going on the show is because I know you're going to edit it and it's not going to be great, but I just want one or two of these little bits of substance to please get in there so that the British people can have a choice in terms of the information that they see on this subject. And I thought the amount of times that I talked about Gladio, Al-Qaeda being funded by the CIA, being given $6 billion in 1989 through to 1992, the fact that Al-Qaeda was shipped in or flown in to fight proxy wars in Bosnia in, you know, in the early 90s, I thought that some of this has got to get in there. And as I was watching it last night, I realised none of this is getting in there, John. I also spoke about Operation Northwoods, which I thought was important. I had two, when they came to me and first asked me to take part, they said, what are your two most important, you know, things, issues that stand out for you? I took the fact that the CCTV footage after King's Cross, there is none of it. And obviously in the most surveilled city in the world, that's mighty strange. And I also took the issue with Peter Power and his training exercise, Visa Consultants. And then I also tied that all into, there was a panorama which was around about 12, 14 months before Terror on the Tube, which Peter Power took part in. And they forgot to mention that bit, strangely, when I was discussing it with them. I also tried to put forth the understanding that I have about 9/11, which was that Mayor Giuliani was running a drill that day or that weekend, which envisaged World Trade Center 7 being evacuated, Tripod 2. So I spoke about all these facts on numerous occasions with numerous individuals. And it appears that they just all disappeared and none of these issues were important, according to the director, obviously.
So there you have it. He was trying to bring up Operation Gladio, Northwoods, and the fact that Peter Powers was running these exercises of the exact same trains and buses being hit at the exact same time. It's all coincidence, though, of course. You know, there's no way anybody could have possibly planned these bombings. And which brought up a neat point. We've been covering the 7/7 bombings lately, and back in July, we covered we put on a clip of John Loftus basically talking about how the Al Qaeda member that they were blaming for all these bombings was an actual member of MI6. So let's go to that clip now.
They were headed by Captain Hook, the Imam in London, the Finsbury Mosque, without the arm. He was the head of that organization. Now, his assistant was a guy named Aswat, Harun Rashid Aswat.
Aswat, who they picked up.
Aswat is believed to be the mastermind of all the bombings in London.
On the 7/7 and 7/21, this is the guy, we think.
This is the guy, and what's really embarrassing is that the entire British police are out chasing him. And one wing of the British government, MI6, or the British Secret Service, has been hiding him. And this has been a real source of contention between CIA, Justice Department, and Britain.
MI6 has been hiding him. Are you saying that he has been working for them?
Oh, I'm not saying it. This is what the Muslim sheikh said in an interview in a British newspaper back in 2001.
So he's a double agent, or what?
He's a double agent.
So there you have it. We produced tons of documentaries. Alex definitely has. You check out Terror Storm. He goes all into the 7/7 bombings and how it was a total farce. And it was planned by the government. And don't believe me. Go check it out for yourself. We now move from a waste of TV airtime in the BBC to a waste here tonight, which is going to be tonight's debate. And if you're one of the people watching it with bated breath, wondering if Mitt Romney or Barack Obama is going to get a one-up on each other, which puppet is going to out-puppet the other puppet? I'm not going to be doing that, and you can, feel free. AllGov pointed out, though, why are there only two candidates in the presidential debates? And Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party is on the ballot in 48 of the 50 states, and Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party is on 39 state ballots. In a pure democracy, it would be considered a given that Johnson and Stein would join Obama and Romney on the stage. But in the United States, elections don't work that way. That's because three presidential debates are not run by the government, but a nonprofit organization, the Commission of Presidential Debates, the CPD, created in 1987 by the Democrat and Republicans, or by the same party, the Democrat and Republican Party, as bipartisan rather than nonpartisan effort. So what does that mean? Well, that means that it doesn't matter that you want a third or maybe even fourth choice, or that there are other ideas besides bombing Iran or bombing Iran. Okay? There are other choices to bombing Iran over fake cries of nuclear weapons. But what's interesting at the bottom of this article, it says, for the record, the debates have seven national sponsors. Anheuser-Busch, the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, Sheldon S. Cohen, Crow & Morning, the International Bottled Water Association, and the Kovler Fund and Southwest Airlines. There used to be more, but the YWCA and Philips Electronics have withdrawn their support over the issue of third-party access, as has British advertising firm BBH New York. So, because they felt that there should be third parties included, these people withdrew their support. Now, here's what I'm saying. We're about to put on the screen the list of sponsors with their contact info. Let's roll those graphics right now. And basically, if you want to see other sponsors get in there. Let's go hit these people up and let's ask them, say, hey, we're not going to shop at your places. We're not going to we're not going to support you as an organization until you withdraw your support to this international corporation of the CBD, this Commission on Presidential Debates. Withdraw your support there so we can have a debate with all parties who are basically eligible. Everyone here would be eligible to win depending on what states they're in and what electoral votes they could get. All four of these candidates. So why not have a debate with all four? What do they have to hide? I mean, these guys have way more money than Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. You know, Obama and Romney are going to outspend everyone. And so what's the harm in letting other people in unless having a fair debate? But anyway, you can waste your time and watch the debates tonight. I will not be doing that. We move now to the more nanny state news. Lake County considers trash cams at school cafeteria. Basically what they want to do is put trash cameras right on top of trash cans and look at what the kids are throwing away. Of course, they're not going to identify the kids, you know. But you know how these things are. First, they want to put it in the trash can. Then they want to put it in the bathroom. Then they want to put it in the locker room. Then they want to put it in the lockers. Then you're going to open your medicine cabinet, and it's going to say, what's wrong? Oh, you remember that from THX 1188? Every time he opened the medicine cabinet, it said, what's wrong? And there's somebody in there watching him. So that's where it starts. It starts with the trash cans, looking, you know, what vegetables the kids are throwing away, and it leads on to other things. Let's roll the clip.
The Lake County School Board is talking about attaching cameras to cafeteria trash cans to study what's being tossed.
They have to take it, and then it ends up in the trash can, and that's a waste of taxpayer money, and it's also not giving the students the nutrition that they need.
School officials say the cameras would give them an idea of which fruits and vegetables are being eaten and which ones are being tossed.
There's your nanny state for you, trying to protect you from cradle to grave and making sure you eat your veggies. And one of the clips we didn't put in there was of a mom who said, you know, I don't think it's the school's responsibility to make sure the kids eat their vegetables. I think that starts at home. And you know what? She's exactly right, because that doesn't cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and man hours to place cameras on top of trash cans to make sure kids eat their veggies. You know what they're going to do then? They're going to put them in their backpacks, okay? Kids aren't stupid. If they don't eat their veggies, they're not going to eat their veggies. And you can't make them do it. Moving on to some marijuana news, some medical marijuana news. L.A. repeals its ban on pot stores. So basically, the 11-2 vote rescinded the measure approved in July and leaves the city with no law regulating about 100 medical marijuana dispensaries. I actually think that's good. I don't think there should be a law regulating medical marijuana dispensaries. I think it should be sold on the corners, just as they sell beer and tobacco. I mean, if they could sell that and people can take it and drink it and get drunk and crash their cars, why can't they also pick up a dime bag or whatever of their pot? It also leaves Los Angeles once again without any law regulating the estimated 1,000 pot shops, which some describe as magnets for crime, and others call a source for relief of those who are desperately ill. The council's 11-2 vote came after an impassioned plea from Councilman Bill Rosenthal, a medical marijuana patient who is fighting a rare form of cancer. Looking gaunt and speaking in a faint voice, Rosenthal asked his colleagues how sick patients like him would be able to acquire the drug if the ban remained in place. Where does anybody go, even a councilman go, to get his medical marijuana, he said. And, you know, this is sad because basically L.A. is going against the wishes of the public. The public has already said they want this. They think, hey, let's at least regulate it as a drug, as a pharmaceutical type product. Let's put, you know, doctors in place. Let's put a layer of health care in there. So, yes, people can still get it if they want to, but it's not a free-for-all, which, hey, that's the first step. Right now we got this measure to make it completely legal is in Colorado, Washington, and I believe even Arkansas is looking at it. And I say, why not? Just deregulate it, tax it, just make it like any other product out there and stop putting all this level of bureaucracy, which just costs more money and takes more off the tax base anyway. And now we move on to an article from USA Hitman. Why is the DEA trying to cover up the agency's medical marijuana raids? And this has to go. The Drug Enforcement Agency raided two medical marijuana dispensaries in California, and now they're refusing to disclose any details of the raid. It says they serve search warrants and at the Green Heart locations in both cities. This is in Anderson and Mount Shasta. However, the documents relating to the warrants and the warrants themselves are sealed in federal court, so she couldn't provide a court case number. Owner Gina Monday was notified by her alarm company morning, and they said someone had broke in, and it was actually DEA officials kicking in the door. Not public servants, once again, DEA officials. There we go. We have that construct going on. But we have a little bit of good news. On the other side of the country, New Hampshire jury nullifies major felony marijuana case. Following the adoption of a new state law on jury nullification in June, a New Hampshire jury nullified its first major felony marijuana case on September 14th when jurors decided to free Doug Darrell, a 59-year-old father of four grown children who was growing illegal plants in his backyard. Activists hailed the decision as a significant victory for the jury nullification movement, which aims to revive awareness about the power inherent in juries to protect citizens from overzealous prosecutors and bad laws by nullifying cases. And we give out, actually, with every order, every time you order, you get a citizen's rule book. And in addition to having the Constitution and Bill of Rights, it also has the jury, the powers of the jury. It's like the jury's handbook. And it is an amazing source of information. And we give that out free every time because if you're going to be on a jury, you should be informed. And I think it was the great Hoppy Heidelberg, who was a grand juror in the Oklahoma City case, who actually read his jury handbook that they gave him. And then he went in and started to tell the prosecutors how he was going to act as a juror, not act as they wanted him to, which is basically as a rubber stamp. So congratulations to Doug Darrell. You know, hopefully your case can be a spotlight for others, and hopefully we can get other juries out there, get them informed, so they can defeat laws like this when they see that they're overzealous and ridiculous and need to be nullified. We end with a little bit of economic news in this segment. How foreclosures ate America. Incredible interactive map shows wave of property repossession over the past 5 years. Because it's one thing to say, well, in 2007 there were this many foreclosures. But then looking at this map, you can actually see the progression, how it slowly goes away from the centers of populations to more rural locations. You can see the map getting bigger and bigger, and now it is just totally eating up a good portion of the eastern United States with the pockets of population over in the west. And I thought one statistic here was interesting because they keep telling you that the economy is getting better. In San Joaquin, California, the rate of foreclosures was one home for every 300. That was in 2007. But fast forward 5 years, instead of recovery, the rate of decline has accelerated to one home in every 153 homes being foreclosed on. It's not getting any better, people. It's getting worse, and now they're just going to keep printing money and giving it to these damn banks who keep loaning it to us at interest. And one more thing I'd like to point out. The national average for foreclosure of properties in 2012 is one in every 681 homes. So there you go. That's your economy getting better. Let's move on to the daily quote, which has to do with the early story from AllGov. Some people say we need a third party. I wish we had a second one. And that's from Jim Hightower, who's kind of a Democratic guy. He used to be agricultural commissioner, I think, of Texas. Pretty interesting fellow, though. I actually like a lot of the things he talks about. He's very civil rights oriented. So he's a good guy. And actually, I think I'm going to try to get him on because I'd like to pick his brain on a few things, especially what we could do here in Texas to hopefully turn this flagging the stagnant economy around. One of the things I think we should be doing is growing hemp. And anyway, with that, we're going to go to break, and we'll be back with Amber Lyon. And then we also have an interview with Steve Shank. He popped in the studio just a little bit ago, and I was talking to him. So we're going to have that interview as well. If you want to become a member, go to prisonplanet.tv, log on, and join up. It's very easy to do. It costs about $5.95 a month, but you get a 15-day free trial. We have every nightly news show we've ever produced since September of 2011, and plus the special reports, the Alex rants, just about what all of his movies, his books. I mean, a litany of stuff. There's so much stuff in there, I get lost in it sometimes. I was just digging around the special reports section, and I found a bunch of old interviews, and I forgot we'd put them up there. I mean, you had to dig down pretty deep, but We have interviews with Russell Means, with Reverend Clinton Childress, the father of weather weapons, I forget his name right offhand, Bill Livingston or Bob Livingston. And, I mean, it's just an amazing treasure trove of information that you could go out there and other people, you know, you could take excerpts of these interviews and cut them up and stick them on YouTube and spread the word. You know, let's get more people informed so we don't have a nation of sheep. Let's get a nation of smart people that know that they're getting screwed by the government so we can do something about it. And with that, we'll be right back.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com. My friends, Alex Jones here with a very important announcement. We are launching a new salvo in the info war because there is a war on for your mind. You know that the globalists are trying to get everybody online and only online so that they can control and surveil information and also erase books, videos, whatever they want to en masse. That's why we're launching our answer to the internet kill switch, InfoWars Magazine. The first issue, we printed over 90,000 copies of the September issue, and it sold out in less than 2 days. So get your copy of the new technocratic elite issue today before it sells out. Again, we cover from the technocratic social engineers' own words, their own admissions, their plan to take over our society and replace us with robots. But we don't just stop with the rise of the robots and the end of humanity, or will humanity survive the singularity? We get into the government buying now 1.6 billion bullets against the American people. We get into Big Sis's surveillance of this magazine and my website, InfoWars.com. We cover QE3 and what hyperinflation means to you and your family. Whatever you do, don't look back later and wish that you would have taken action. Take action now. People have never been more ready for this information. People have never been this hungry, starving for the truth. And it is contained in the new issue of InfoWars Magazine. This is a time capsule. It is so important we get it out to everyone. If you subscribe now for 12 issues, we will give you the first issue absolutely free. So that's 13 issues for our 13 colonies, part of restoring the spirit of 1776 worldwide. Again, go to InfoWarsStore.com and order 10 packs, up to 100 packs at cost, and give them out to people in your area. The response last month was incredible. People are hungry to actually hold this information in their hands. You can also subscribe and get 12 issues delivered to your door and get the first inaugural issue free. I'm Alex Jones, thanking all of you for your support and making our operation a huge success.
Welcome back to InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew, and we are now joined by three-time Emmy Award-winning journalist Amber Lyon, who was effectively ostracized from CNN for basically telling the truth, because that's not something you can do on mainstream media anymore. You have to follow the talking points that are handed down from above, which could come from the White House or it could come from major banks and corporations. Whoever is pulling the strings, that's where the news is coming from. And so she was laid off after she reported the massacres going on in Bahrain, which our corporate warlord masters didn't appreciate. So with that, we turn to the reporter, Amber Lyon. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
So I basically want you to go from the beginning of this whole thing. Tell us a little bit about Bahrain, how it came into existence, how it's basically a puppet dictatorship, which I guess I'm kind of giving it away. But anyway, in your own words, what do you know about Bahrain?
Okay, well, first of all, a lot of people say that what does Bahrain matter to the United States? It's this country thousands of miles away, but it really means everything to all of us right now because our tax dollars are going to support this regime. It's also the home of the 5th Fleet Naval Base, and the U.S. needs that base now because it's right across from the Strait of Hormuz is Iran. And I don't know if you've noticed all the Iran propaganda on the news lately, but odds are we are headed into some kind of conflict or potential war with Iran. So the U.S. really wants this naval base. The problem is the majority of people living in Bahrain, 60 to 70%, want the U.S.-backed regime out of the country. And the U.S. doesn't want these people to win, the U.S. government, because if they do win, odds are they're going to tell the U.S. to get the heck out of their country because we've been giving this regime weapons and support, and this regime has proven to be oppressing these people for decades. I mean, we're talking, they've been jailing and torturing doctors, journalists, some of the most prominent members of society. So they don't want this story told. And I went to Bahrain and did a documentary and actually was able to uncover some of these horrific human rights abuses against doctors, even ambulance drivers who were beaten by security forces, people shot and killed in broad daylight by Bahraini forces as well. And when we got back to the U.S., at first, when I was working with CNN, we were able to get a lot of Bahrain coverage on air, but then the regime started calling and complaining. And 3 months later, when our documentary was ready to air, it aired on CNN US, but never aired on CNN International. So, and that is the most watched English language station in the region. Also, it's the area where all of our sources at the Bahrain story was affected. We wanted these people to see this documentary. Shortly after, people at CNN started contacting me, employees who'd been there for decades, and writing me, telling me, this is very suspicious, you should look into this. And I started an investigation and then found out that Bahrain is actually a paying customer at CNN. I'm not kidding you. Bahrain gives money to CNN.
Well, there you go, because they want CNN to send reporters over to whitewash the situation to promote, you know, that Bahrain's a good peg in the cog of our war machine. And this was all during the time of the Arab Spring uprisings. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So you guys were reporting on the same stuff. And what's funny is CNN was going around to these other countries and saying, look how great these protests are. These people want democracy. This is great that now Twitter and these social networks are spreading democracy around. But when you guys are doing the same exact thing in a U.S.-backed puppet dictatorship, well, then it's all hands off.
Yeah, and I was treated like a pain in the rear, you know, almost like would you just kind of go away instead of actually rewarding good quality journalism from my crew and my producers and uncovering these human rights abuses. It was very frustrating for me at the time because I heard the people of Bahrain literally shouting in the dark for help. And that's one of the most pure revolutions in the area because it's 60 to 70% of the population that wants this regime out. Meanwhile, you'd see CNN rewarding the reporters who were in Syria and Libya and these other countries. And really, had it not been for myself and a couple other journalists who I respect, the Bahrain story almost would have never made it on CNN. Because like I said, Bahrain is a paying customer at CNN. Bahrain literally pays CNN to create what I consider to be infomercials for dictators. And that's sponsored content that is disguised as news.
Is there a 1-800 number at the bottom where you can give to Bahrain? I mean, that's just, it's ludicrous. That how much money did they give to CNN? Do you know?
Well, that's a good question, because after I left, I wrote CNN and I said I felt I deserved, you know, as a journalist who'd given 2 years of my life and passion to the network, I deserved to know. I felt defrauded when I found out Bahrain was paying CNN, and I was never given a response. No one ever wrote me back with any type of figures. But this is content that they're airing on CNN International during the daily, you know, news cycle. And you're watching this content and you're seeing a reporter in one of the shows live from the Bahrain racetrack talking about how progressive the country is and how the crown prince is a reformer. And nowhere to be found is a disclosure telling you that Bahrain is actually paying for this content. Put things into perspective. Imagine if CNN was taking paid content from Assad or Ahmadinejad in Iran. I mean, people would be outraged. This is journalistically against all journalistic ethics. And I feel like CNN is defrauding viewers. And they're not only doing it with Bahrain. They're doing it with Kazakhstan, Georgia, Lebanon, and other countries. And it's a real shame, because it really worries me about the survival of journalism when you have the most trusted name in news airing stuff that is paid for by regimes that they're supposed to be a watchdog on. And another question I have is, what about the people? Were the oppressed people of Bahrain ever given the opportunity to go on CNN International and buy favorable content? Were they?
Exactly. Yeah. If you're going to let the dictator buy, why not at least let the people pony up the same amount so we can have a bidding war going for our propaganda that goes on? It's so disgustingly funny in terms of how this whole process is and the veneer that they put on. You know, and CNN's not the only company doing this. I know, you know, Fox is engaged in it. MSNBC is engaged in it. You know, you got the hard right, the hard left, and you got kind of CNN as sort of in the middle. And it's just over and over again we hear that they're putting in news, they're targeting things, and it's on all levels. It's on a local level. It's on a, you know, if they want to get some kind of, you know, vaccine shot thing put into place, or now they want to do this thing in San Antonio where they want to put RFID tags on students and track them. And they've got loads of news that come in for that, pro this. But then you talk to parents and students and other teachers, and they don't want it. And they go to school boards to speak, and there's silence. They're not given any time to talk. And it's whatever the corporate, mega corporate talking point is gets jammed down our throats on a consistent basis. And it really makes me sick. And I had a question in that, but I forgot it. But let's go back to Bahrain. How did they keep you guys from actually reporting the news? Didn't they steal some of your equipment, destroy your tapes? What did they do?
Yeah, and you know, we had snuck into some villages. We kind of showed up at a time where Saudi troops, once again, this is all connected to Saudi Arabia as well. And Saudi troops were in Bahrain and they'd taken over, and I don't know how we did it. It was a miracle, but we were able to avoid our government minders and actually sneak into some of these villages to film these human rights abuses. And as we were leaving one of the villages, a helicopter spotted us, and then we were soon surrounded by helicopters and masked men, about 20 masked men with machine guns, and they forced us onto the ground and pointed the guns at our heads and then went through our van and found all of our video, grabbed cameras my producer was holding and erased his video too. And so they thought they had erased all of the content that we filmed, but my producer and I actually had the discs with the most damning content hidden in our bras, and were able to get out of the country with that video. So you can imagine their surprise when we showed back up in the U.S. and started airing this content, because the Saudis and the Bahrainis had thought that they had just erased history, and unfortunately they hadn't. And this is a lot. The implications of the Bahrain censorship go much more deep than just CNN censoring something. This is all part of a plot right now to feed the nation propaganda about Iran and potentially get us into another war with Iran. And the U.S. government, as I was saying earlier, doesn't want the Bahrain revolution to succeed, so they don't want reporting on the human rights abuses there, because if that revolution succeeds, we're going to kick protesters in Bahrain are going to kick the U.S. out of their country. You know, I mean, they're very upset with the U.S. We've been selling this oppressive regime weapons more than $1 billion worth of weapons that they've been using to harm these protesters.
How does the police state compare, say, even to the, you know, compared to Saudi Arabia or the United States? How much surveillance was going on in Bahrain that you saw, just in a general terms, like in when you were out filming in the markets or at the malls? Did you feel there was a camera everywhere? Did you feel that the police were always watching, or even citizens were spying on you at any point?
Yeah, well, you saw the police presence was incredible. There were military tanks, military checkpoints almost in front of every neighborhood in town. At night, you would see these tanks drive by, and you'd just see about 10 masked men in camouflage outfits riding on top of these tanks.
And those are love soldiers, right? Those are love soldiers?
Yeah. Love soldiers, yeah, of course. And it's just a way to systematically terrify the people and try to squash dissent. And these people have been very resilient, and they've been able to really come out against all the odds and continue with their revolution. And all you have to do right now is head to YouTube and Google, you know, Bahrain revolution or Bahrain protesters take the streets, and you'll see hundreds of thousands of people at these marches in the street. It's unbelievable. You just see that the line just goes down the highway of people. And we're talking, Bahrain's about the size population wise of San Francisco. And when you see this video, it really just hits you as to how pure this revolution is and how the majority of the people there want this regime out. Whether that will happen or not, who knows? But the U.S. for sure has been making it difficult for these people to succeed.
Of course, because we need that port there. We need to be able to encircle Iran, which, you know, we've got Iraq, we've got Afghanistan, we're looking at the Kazakhstan and dealing with them. And basically, this is an encirclement maneuver, a long-range, long-term encirclement maneuver of Iran to eventually squash them out of existence. Let's go to, after this airs, you got calls from other producers at CNN that were telling you to stop doing this. You got calls from, I mean, what was the outcome or what was the final effect of putting this documentary out?
About me coming forward about the censorship, or actually putting the documentary out onto CNN?
Well, putting it out and then, yeah, go into the censorship, how afterwards they ended up laying you guys off, or a bunch of your division. How did that go?
Yeah, so what happened was the documentary did air one night on CNN US, but it did not air on CNN International, which is the most watched English news station in the area. I mean, this was the area that needed to see the documentary the most. Shortly after that happened, my crew was dumbfounded. Even bosses directly above me had no idea why. They couldn't explain why it didn't air on CNN International. So I went and met with the president, Tony Maddox, on two different occasions to ask for some answers. I thought my crew deserved it, deserved to know the truth, and I was never given any type of an explanation. CNN now says it was an editorial decision, but I'm not buying that, because many within CNN contacted me after that, employees who'd been there for decades, and told me to research this and that something suspicious was going on. And that's when I found out that Bahrain was a paying customer. I came forward with this information about a month ago. And when I first did, I just tweeted about it and let people know what was going on, because we've seen more and more of our human rights activists and sources that we had used in our stories go missing in Bahrain or end up jailed. And after I tweeted about the censorship, a representative for the executives called my acting agent and told him that I needed to be quiet. If I continued to speak up, I would lose my health insurance and my severance. And then also after that, I think above all, I've had only a positive response from my former colleagues and journalists in general, because I think a lot of journalists know this is going on, and not just on the Bahrain story, on many stories within the corporate press. I mean, it's pretty obvious. All you have to do is turn on the TV and look at what the news is talking about and how they're trying to distract and feed the nation, this poor unassuming Americans, with propaganda. Instead of actually the real stories that matter. You know, right now we should not be talking about Justin Bieber on the news or celebrities. Look at the state our country's in. Journalism is printing something someone else doesn't want to be printed. Everything else is PR. And unfortunately, our mainstream media corporations, these corporate outlets, have evolved to just PR most of the time, and it's a shame for journalism.
I totally agree. We just actually put your Twitter page up. If you want to give that a plug real quick, you had some interesting things in there. You were covering Bahrain, NDAA, issues that actually matter. So go ahead and plug your Twitter site, and I guess that's where you've got the most current stuff that you're talking about at this point.
Yeah, Twitter at Amber Lyon, Lyon, and also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/AmberLyonFans. If you go there, those are the most commonly updated. I have a website, AmberLyonLive.com, but it's currently being refurbished. So I'd prefer if you'd stick with Twitter and Facebook for now until my new site's up. But I'm trying to keep this in the news and keep people talking about it because the mainstream isn't. And stuff that's happening right now, even for us journalists, is very scary. The country's headed in an unknown yet frightening direction right now.
How do you feel about Chris Hedges' lawsuit coming out against the NDAA and other journalists that are speaking out? Is it giving you more confidence to say more, or do you feel it's going to increase, I guess, more people coming out, more whistleblowing?
Of course. I think Chris Hedges is a hero because at a time when no one was really talking about the NDAA, he put his neck on the line and went out to fight against it, and he continues to right now. And he's doing that not only on behalf of journalists, but on behalf of the American people. The NDAA is terrified. There are very few times where, as journalists, we can come forward and actually take a stance. And we have taken a stance, a group of us, on NDAA and says this needs to be repealed. It is so dangerous, especially to journalism. It will instill so much fear in our sources that it's going to make fewer and fewer sources able to come forward and talk to journalists and leak information that can be vital to the public good and discussion. And that threatens investigative journalism. Not only that, let's get to the terrorist clause, where the U.S. government now can essentially call anyone a terrorist and hold them indefinitely without trial.
Yeah.
You remember Nelson Mandela was once called a terrorist, Martin Luther King. So we're going to crush dissent with the NDAA, and most of the public in America doesn't even know this exists, and that's what scares me the most.
Well, it just came out a couple days ago that the Army considers people who go on social networks to be terrorists. I mean, they just broaden the definition to say, hey, you breathe air, you drink water, you must be a terrorist. I don't know what else to say. It's totally amazing that they can force feed their agenda on us on all these major platforms. And, you know, you have an informed populace at some level. Some people are informed and they're out there getting alternative sources, but, you know, most of the public, they're jellyfish, and they're going to be watching this debate tonight thinking these are actually two people that are really speaking their mind and not reading from note cards and teleprompters, and I bet they already had the questions thrown at them beforehand.
And it's a shame. And you know what? I blame journalism. I blame the failure of the mainstream media, because the poor American public is not being informed. They're not being given the information that they need. What makes me the most concerned about that is I'm seeing an escalation in propaganda toward a war with Iran. And I feel we're being led down the path like puppets, helpless puppets, into another war. Instead of Iraq this time, it's Iran. And the American people deserve better. You know, I grew up in the Midwest. My grandmother watches these mainstream outlets, and it kills me that she's being fed lies.
Yeah, and it's not going to take 10 to 15 years for 2,000 casualties to U.S. casualties to appear in a war with Iran. That's going to be a weekly body count, because Iran does have capabilities. They're not just going to lay down and roll over. These people are ready to fight, and I'm not looking forward to any more wars. I wish we could just get out of the business of war and get into the business of more space travel and building things and hover cars and stuff that we should have had years ago. Instead, you know, we spend our technology time and our brain power on killing people and controlling information and controlling things. What has happened, Amber Lyon, since you've come out with this message? Have you been persecuted even more? Have you found more leads? What's been going on?
I've been overwhelmed with emails from people supporting my decision, and I really appreciate it. Another reason I came forward was because people have known this is happening for so long, and I felt like they needed to be validated in their beliefs instead of always being called conspiracy theorists. So a lot of people thanked me for that. Journalistically, I've had an overwhelmingly positive response from former CNN colleagues as well as journalists in general. I'm hoping that this will encourage more journalists to come forward. Complacent journalists killing journalism, and in the end, they're going to be looked at as just as guilty as the corporations they work for and on the wrong side of history, especially these journalists like Aaron Burnett that are constantly feeding the public with Iran war propaganda on a nightly basis. I don't know how she sleeps at night. I really don't.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see now with you coming out and Chris Hedges and Glenn Greenwald writing about this stuff, that we're going to see a domino effect of more journalists coming out, more sources coming forward, because now people are seeing, hey, you're not being set up, you're not being killed, you're not being targeted. You know, people may be mad, but what consequences have happened other than, you know, you don't have a job working for Bahrain's media mouthpiece anymore? You know, and who wants that job anyway? That's soulless. And so people, I think it's going to create a domino effect where more people come out and just start telling the truth and just realize that the truth is the most powerful weapon that we have at this point. It's more powerful than bombs and guns. It is. That's why they're afraid of it.
Exactly. And you know, the fact that CNN called my agent and tried to get me to shut up and threatened to take my health insurance and my severance, it just solidifies the fact that something's going on here and being covered up. And come on, you know, it's like, what's a paycheck if in the end you're really harming the American public and potentially costing lives? You know, part of the reason we entered Iraq was that the mainstream media repeated the phrase weapons of mass destruction an infinite number of times and instilled such a tremendous amount of fear in the American public that they went ahead and approved that war. And the same thing's happening right now with Iran. And like I said, these journalists that are doing it and know this is happening are just as guilty as the corporations that they work for, and they're on the wrong side of history.
I agree. I totally agree with that statement. They are going to feel their time will come where they're going to be judged, and it'll be either in this life or the next life, or, you know, when the mainstream media, which is falling, when they continue to fall, you're going to see those people getting the axe first, because anytime you serve this evil system, you may think you're protected, but what's going to happen is you're on the chopping block. You're the next one in line, and you know, that's all I can say to those people who are following the system right now, that they are going to fall, because they're at the end of the day, there's no room left to run when the dominoes start falling down, and we're going to win. That's what I think.
And the truth doesn't have a shelf life. It will come out. The kind of systematic censorship and screening of news and state TV-esque way of running these networks, it's going to come out. And I'm just hoping now that the journalists that are sitting there with a conscience and see that the screening every day of everything that's happening in the UAE, in Bahrain, the over saturation of Iran war propaganda. People that are bothered by this, you know, it's time to come forward and quit. I mean, what's worse? I'd rather be broke and poor and living out of my car, but living there telling the truth than rich and feeding the public with lies.
Totally agree. And I just want to point out, since I went back and looked in our archives, I found an article from 2008. Pentagon expands propaganda reach with foreign news websites. Apparently, they were going around setting up, they were expanding, quote, information operations on the Internet with purposely set up foreign news websites that are designed to look like independent media sources, but are in reality are nothing more than direct military propaganda. So this isn't limited to CNN. It's not limited to Fox News, or, you know, the Pentagon directly goes in and creates foreign news websites. They pay locals to act as independent journalists and basically to put in talking points. And that's the name of the game. If they think if they can repeat talking points enough, they can get a war with Iran and that people will agree with it. And, I think when this happens, it's going to be the death knell for these corporate powers, because when they go into Iran, it's going to be a lot of death and destruction on both sides.
And I can't shout about this loud enough, how much we're being misled into this war. If Iran has, one of the main reasons Iran wants nuclear weapons or a nuclear weapon is to keep the U.S. from invading the country. Yeah. Look what happened when Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi quit their nuke programs. The U.S. was able to go in and invade the country. It's mostly to protect the country from the U.S. actually going in and invading Iran. It would be suicide if Iran was to send one bomb over their borders into any other country. Then they're going to be attacked by 5,000 bombs. That's suicidal. The nuclear threat with Iran right now is being overhyped, and experts say the same forces behind the war in Iraq are behind now all of this propaganda sending us into Iran. This time, instead of weapons of mass destruction, it's nuclear weapons in the hands of Ahmadinejad.
Right. And they think 10 years people are going to fall asleep and buy the same thing again. And it's a new administration. So it's Obama. He's not a warmonger like Bush, when in reality, he's starting just as many wars. He's following the same playbook of the elite of the New World Order. I mean, he is following that playbook to basically get rid of sovereignty worldwide, because when that happens, they can bring in a world government.
Exactly. And not only that, journalism. Obama's had a war on journalists and whistleblowers that we have never seen another president in our history attack journalists and whistleblowers like Obama. We need whistleblowers. We need whistleblowers to tell us that things are going wrong in the U.S. government so that we can fix them. If we don't have whistleblowers, we can never fix the system. We need journalists to expose corruption. And he's used the 1917 Espionage Act to go after more journalists and whistleblowers than any other president in history. And he's essentially the black and white of the situation is he's turned journalists into criminals because he is subpoenaing journalists to give up information about their sources. And our number one rule as journalists is we don't give up our sources. So if you're taking us to court because we won't do it, you're calling us criminals. And it's had a chilling effect on investigative journalism. And investigative journalism is our main watchdog on the U.S. government and on a potential war with Iran. And Obama is directly attacking that. So I don't see how he is any better than other presidents people have been criticizing. Journalistically, he's the worst we've ever had.
Well, he is giving out free cell phones. So I guess he can't be all that bad. Just kidding.
But, yeah, well, they're probably being monitored by the NSA as well. So,
of course. Why do you think they're giving them out? Here's a free phone. You know, don't even get me started on that. But Amber Lyon, thanks for coming on the show today and shedding more light on these corporate cockroaches that are trying to take over the planet and basically tell people what to say and hide the truth. Because like you said, the truth has no shelf life. And if we have more people coming out like yourself and Ben Swan, he's another guy that's out there doing it, Glenn Greenwald and others out there who are out there, Chris Hedges, who are reporting the truth and just trying to, you know, hey, we might all have difference of opinions on how the world should or how we should run our country or how things should be run. But, you know, damn it, we need to stand up for the truth at the end of the day, because if we don't do that, we're no better than the people we're speaking out against.
So. I agree completely. And this is a critical time in our nation's history and survival. And we can either be led into another war like helpless puppets or actually get up and get informed and figure out what's really going on and find news sources that you feel are truthful. And take action, because I hear some people tell me information scares me too much. I can't handle it. But information is power. Information gives you the ability to look at the problem and find solutions.
There you go. We'll leave it at that. Thanks for coming on the show, and we will hope to see you again soon. And hopefully you have more breaking stuff, and people can follow you at Amber Lyon on Twitter.com. Is that correct?
It's Twitter, www.twitter.com/AmberLyon or at
AmberLyon. I don't tweet, so I don't know, but there you go. Thanks for coming on the show, Amber. And, that normally would do it for our show, but we're going to be right back after this. And sitting right next to me will be Steve Schenck from eFoods Direct. He's a food insider, one of the largest food companies in America. And we're going to talk about the hierarchy of needs. And I just want to go to one thing Amber Lyon just said, which the truth doesn't have a shelf life. So if you're out there, if you're a source, potential source, if you're a reporter sitting on a story, worried that, you know, your career might be in jeopardy. What have you got to lose? I mean, you want to be on the right side of history. You want to be on the side of good. If you want to be on the side of evil, then just come out and support evil. Don't hide behind a veneer I don't want to say anything good or bad either way. I mean, come out, join the Jedi's, join the good side. Let's turn this thing around so we can have a world that we really want to live in, not one that is controlled by henpecking, gibbering control freak idiots. And with that, we'll be right back after this short break.
Hello, this is Linda West with a special report for Infowars.com. A new DVD has come out by GMO expert and scholar Jeffrey Smith. It's entitled Genetic Roulette. It exposes the shockingly unbelievable connection between the proliferation of GMOs by huge agri-corporations and the huge increase in disease in America.
Things we're seeing today aren't normal. We didn't see them 30 years ago or 50 years ago.
Illnesses that weren't epidemic before are now epidemic.
With this new comprehensive information, we can finally solve the mystery between the rising disease, cancer, allergies, Alzheimer's, premature aging, and even autism.
I'm concerned about all the health issues that I'm seeing. But the one that I am most alarmed about is autistic spectrum, which is literally skyrocketed.
We can't say for sure that GMOs have anything to do with autism, but we can't say for sure that it doesn't. In fact, there's been an increase in autism since GMOs were introduced, and animals that eat GMOs, both in laboratory and in livestock situations, have shown some telltale signs that some practitioners say are linked with autism.
Jeffrey Smith has done the scientific research that finally reveals the truth about GMOs that big agri-corps and the government has tried so hard to cover up. This food conspiracy is making them billionaires and us sick.
He said he lost about 90% of his miniature steers. What the problem was is, I guess he said that they weren't able to process the food correctly and they would bloat up and die from it.
Now that we have the real information, we can make changes. Now we know exactly why diseases are on the rise, surgeries are on the rise, and so many small minds are being stolen from autism. I know today we all have a lot on our plate. But what's on our plate today is killing us. This is Linda West wishing your family a happy and healthy future.
Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
Christy Hightower here with PlanetInfoWars.com to give you a quick update on what's going on the site. Now, Alex says it all the time, you are the resistance. And if you're watching this broadcast right now, you're already making the effort to educate yourself. Now, I'm asking you to make the effort to get involved. And what better place and what better time than now to join PlanetInfoWars.com. Now, I want to put this out there. You don't have to be a member to see some of the articles and the missions that I'm going to mention. But obviously, you can get involved and you can see comments and you can be more active.
active if you're a member. So planetinfowars.com. But on that note, I wanted to move into this article written by Planet Infowars user Exilus. It really struck a chord with me because, here, let me read that first line to you. It says, "You've severed ties with friends whose time is no longer worth your own because they have made it clear they are too attached with the false reality they've grown up with and fed on a daily basis." Now, you can go finish this. It's titled Woes of the Awakened, and it's in the offbeat category. So offbeat category, Woes of the Awakened. Check it out. I really appreciate your heartfelt post, Exilus. I appreciate it. All right, so moving on, there's actually another article I came across, and it was posted by Now. The user is Now, and it says, "Critics say you libertarians are soulless materialists." I don't know what you guys think about this, so go and put your comments below at the bottom of the article. If you sign in, you can post your comment. I'm really curious to see what you guys have to say about this. And then lastly, there's this awesome mission, and it's by the Resistance Group, one of many awesome active groups. And the mission is simple. It asks you to list what are the top five subjects you feel people should be talking about. So there's anything people have already posted. There's anything from Monsanto and GMOs, which we've seen a lot about lately, to the Federal Reserve, war crimes, economic collapse, preparedness. You name it, it's on the site. So it's great that people are already saying that this is what they want to see more of. And so you think you can change the world? Well, those of you that can and those of you that cannot are both usually right. So lastly, I wanted to say that if you haven't signed up for your free e-subscription for the InfoWars magazine, this is the October edition, number 2, go to InfoWarsShop.com to buy it in bulk, or you can go to InfoWars.com/newsletter and sign up for it there. We'll be sending out the digital copy hopefully in the next few days. So go ahead and sign up ASAP. And then also, don't forget to follow us, Planet InfoWars. We tweet out. We have an @RealPIW. It's @RealPIW. So you can find any of our tweets. You can also do a #PIW. You can find us that way. And we're also on Facebook, /RealPlanetInfoWars. Or you can find us through Alex Jones's Facebook. So we're just trying to keep you updated. We ask you questions. We want to see what you've got going on. We like to tweet out cool missions that we find on the site. We like to send out articles. So if you kind of get intimidated, the website Planet InfoWars can be a little messy because there's so many cool articles and there's so many cool groups and missions. So we try to narrow it down a little bit for you there. And thank you, Patriots. You all are talking and we're listening. So till next time.
Welcome back to this third and final installment of today's show, InfoWars Nightly News. Today's date is October 3rd, 2012. I'm your host, Rob Dew. And as I promised at the end of the last segment, sitting next to me is one of the leading food industry experts, Steve Shank. And he has come to talk about a whole host of issues. And so we're just going to get right to it. Steve, how's it going today?
Hey, it's good to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So we were talking earlier just about a myriad of food problems that are going on. You came in here and did two interviews with Alex, and you guys, I guess, scratched the surface on it, but, you know, there's so many issues involved with food because it's everywhere in our lives. It's part of everything. And we were talking about the price of bacon and what's going on with that.
You don't have to talk about the price of bacon anymore.
Yeah.
Because there ain't going to be none.
I like bacon,
works.
Too.
Yeah, well, so do I. I was raised on a farm, and you have to understand that what we're getting right now is a reaction of the media, and the media is always very slow to bring out news that might reflect badly on the present administration, particularly in an election year. Mm-hmm. So if the news media is coming out and saying, guys, there's not going to be any more bacon, there's not going to be any more pork in a very short period of time because we've had this serious drought, which Alex and your whole team and I've been talking about for quite some time.
Right.
We're in the seventh year of this thing. But what's going to happen is a lot of times people have not realized the impact on their food budget. They all know that it's going up like crazy. They all know that 20,000 people a day in the United States are falling below the poverty line in the ability to buy their own groceries. we've got about half the population right now that needs some sort of subsidization for their grocery budget, whether it's from the church or the government or whatever source it is. And so you put that all together, and it's kind of like the old story about cooking frogs. You know, you put a frog in cold water and you turn up the heat, and by the time it gets hot enough,
it's too late.
It's too late.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is it's too late. And when the farm market reports come out for October, mm-hmm. which indicates what kind of crops we've got coming on this year, the news media have already picked it up and are presetting the population of the country for the fact there's not going to be any more bacon.
Yeah. They've been setting the table for this.
That's right. Setting the table. That's not good.
No, it's not.
But anyway, the fact is that what we've got is we've got a drought. It's knocking out the corn crop, mm-hmm. a high percentage of the corn crop. Some people estimate this about 70%. Well, when you look at the percentages of corn that has been allocated to ethanol to put in our gas tank.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's what? That's 40%. Okay. You've got another 40%. That's what? Left for animal feed and 20% for people.
Yeah.
Well, what folks don't realize is that that portion that goes for animal feed is what provides their poultry and their all their livestock, because that's animal feed that is being restructured away from our food supply. So the pork is just the beginning. You've got to understand, when you get into third world countries, what they grow is not beef. They aren't growing large quantities of dairy cattle and this type of thing. When you've got the little farm that's just barely surviving, that's just barely making it, they raise hogs and chickens. You can fatten out a hog in one season and get it ready for market. It's going to take a couple seasons to get a head of beef up to speed. So the pork is indicative of the protein source of a country going down and down and disappearing. And when the news media comes out, and they're already at the point where they're saying there isn't going to be any, or people will definitely not be able to afford it, what happens to those families that are falling below the poverty line every day in this country when we've got 50 million people on food stamps, and that doesn't count all of the people that are getting subsidization of their food budget out of other places?
Right.
So we've got some serious stuff going on.
Oh, and protein is one of the main sources of food that you need. And they make the USDA pyramid, which shows lots of carbohydrates, which, mm-hmm. you know, that's really not what you need more of. You need protein, fruits, and vegetables, and mainly protein and vegetables.
Well, and the interesting thing is that as a result of this, as a result of the families that are losing ground with being able to afford the protein sources, what they're going for is high percentages of carbohydrates in their diet, and so their balance is off. And that's why you can measure a high percentage of the population's butts and axe handles.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we've got some key people in the White House that are saying, we have to do something about the weight of our country, and we need to monitor what people are eating so that we can deal with this weight problem, this health problem, because it's going to affect our health care program. And we've got 17 pages in the health care program that addresses what people can and cannot eat. And all of this is counterproductive.
Oh, yeah.
You bring the people to an economic level where they can't afford the food, and so they go to carbohydrates, their butts get wide, mm-hmm. and then you complain about the fact that they're having health problems with all the diabetes and all these types of things, and it's going to affect the health care program, and so we don't want to charge you for everybody's health care that's fat,
mm-hmm.
and so where does it all end?
Right. Well, yeah, I tell you where it ends. It ends in the trash can. We just covered a story today how the kids aren't eating the vegetables that they're being given at school, or I guess they're paying for.
Uh-huh.
And so they want to put cameras on the trash cans to see what type of food they're throwing away.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just the nanny state has just gotten out of control. And you know, there's one mother there that they interview, and she says, well, you know, it's not the school's job to make these kids eat. It's the parents' job to feed these kids properly. So when they get to school, they're eating the things. I mean, let's not even get into the school problem as it is now. But just the whole notion that it's the government's job. They think they have to control everything all along the way. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they're going to get into this food issue when there's no food around. What are they going to do?
Well, the interesting thing is that the government doesn't have any food reserves. Absolutely none. Now, a lot of people assume that, the government is going to feed them. Where does the food come from that the government feeds them with? It's not coming from the government. They don't have any food reserves. So what's going to ultimately happen is that the people right now who can afford their food are paying dearly for it.
Mm-hmm.
The people who can't afford the food, that food is being channeled over to the people, and who's paying for it? We were talking before we came on this program about the fact that right now every person in the country is being charged to give the people who can't afford them cell phones.
Obama phones.
They're
phones. Everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, and that comes right out of your universal fee that you pay to the government and everybody's cell phone bill. And, you know, people aren't the wiser. They don't know. They just, oh, it's $3. Well, that's $3 from every cell phone customer.
Yeah.
And where does it end, though? You know, do we need to give everybody free airplane tickets too?
So who's paying for it?
Exactly, we are.
The ones that, work hard
the ones
enough
that
to
can.
Stay ahead of the system.
Right.
Now, let me ask you this. If the government doesn't have any food, there's no food reserve, and they've committed themselves with all of the people on food stamps that they're encouraging to get on food stamps before the election, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they're eating so they can go vote.
You don't have to scream for very much transparency to wonder why everybody's being given food stamps before the election.
Right.
It doesn't take much transparency to know why everybody's being given phones that can't afford them before the election.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, connect the dots for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Okay, but you put this together. If you're aggravated as you look at your phone bill and say, oh, well, it's another $3. But you multiply it by the number of people that are paying for their phones, and some of them are struggling to pay for those phones because they need them to function. If you think that's aggravating to people, what's going to happen when those who are able to pay for the food, no matter how expensive it is, as it starts to disappear, find out that in order to feed the people that have been committed to that they will be fed, the food from these large supplies of food out here in the country is being taken from those who can afford it to give to those who are already on the system. So when the bread line starts and no one can afford food, guess who's going to be standing there? The people who are prudent enough to have their savings account, that were prudent enough to set aside a little bit of gold, that were prudent enough to have a retirement program, the disabled veterans with their meager little checks.
Mm-hmm.
And these people will be standing in line to get the food that they have been willing to pay for behind the people that are mandated to have the food that doesn't happen to go into the gas tanks.
Of the cars. Yeah.
That we drive, that we can't afford to buy the gas to go to the grocery store to buy the food that we can't afford.
Exactly. And how's the government going to do it? They're going to executive order. They've already made these executive orders. They've been changed. As they go through, we covered it in Police State 4, they have the ability to confiscate farm equipment, farms, food stocks, and they will just warehouse it all. And they will come in, they might even come into your business by government order with trucks and just start backloading it in there. And then, hey, are you going to pay me for this food? Oh, no, this is executive order. This is what you have to do.
Well, that particular executive order that you're talking about is a retreading of the executive order that we were all appalled at back a few years ago when Mr. Clinton signed that first executive order. Now it's just been kind of refurbished and re-edited and brought back out.
They call it reauthorization.
We're
going to reauthorize this and change a couple sentences here and mainly make it more totalitarian and shove it back in your face. That's how.
Well, let me tell you about a ladder. There's a ladder of human existence. When a baby is born, it starts out, and what's the one function it has? What's job one for that baby? Everything that baby comes in contact with goes in the mouth, right?
Right.
Okay. What's the difference between that baby and someone who has just lost their job? Or someone who is the recent victim of a natural disaster? What's the difference between that baby and a too much in debt yuppie executive that is just on a survival mode? The first rung of the survival ladder has to be food. Mm-hmm. And until that is taken care of, until that is taken care of, what we have is a situation where nobody can do anything. Now, let me give you some perfect examples. That's not just in this country. If you look at slavery, if you look at the feudal system, if you look at sharecroppers, and if you look at a totalitarian government that controls its people, what do they all control it with? Yeah. They control those people with food. If you can keep everyone at just the survival mode so that every waking hour...
On the brink of starvation.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Every waking hour is totally committed to just providing the food for that day. We've seen this happen in many of the Iron Curtain countries and all of the stuff. You see the poverty that, mm-hmm. that's the result of taking from the rich and giving to the poor and all this equalization so that everybody is equalized at a survival level so that they can't go to the next step. What's the baby do? It's on that bottom rung, hanging on for dear life, eating. Until that's taken care of, that if that baby is standing in the crib crying for food, they aren't going to get to the point where they think. They aren't going to get to the point where they have emotions, where they start to have feelings and start to learn. They're going to stay right there until they get that solved.
And that's where the government wants you. That's where they like you. They don't want you questioning the system.
Rob, I'm not even going to say that. I'm just going to let all of your viewers draw their own conclusion.
All right.
That baby, that out-of-work engineer, that mm-hmm. mom that's that single mom that's just trying to feed her three kids, mm-hmm. and that disaster relief individual... They're all at the same spot. No matter where they climbed on the level of human progression and their development as an individual, to their creativity, to maximize their capability as a human being, whenever one of those situations hits, boom, they go right straight down to that bottom rung.
Right.
And that's where people no longer have the choice to think and feel and fight to retain their liberties and freedoms and become who they're capable of becoming.
Yeah.
They are literally at the survival level, and that's where people have to be.
Going back to that, I read a book, and it's basically children's accounts of the Pol Pot regime growing up in that they were, you know, between the ages of 7 and 12, and they were brought into these camps, and they were forced to grow food. They were given a meager supply of rice. They were eating bugs. They were eating each other. It was truly horrifying to think, but they were on that one rung of the ladder, whereas before, you know, their parents were, you know, intelligent professors, doctors, whatever. They went into these towns and just anybody who was smart, shoot the parents immediately. Take the kids, put the kids in the fields.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary to think that that could happen here at some point and that people will be scrambling for food at because as a result of a natural disaster, government collapse, a rolling situation complex of a lot of different things. It could be anything.
Let's take the ladder again.
Yeah.
Let's take the ladder again. 20,000 people a day in America are falling below the poverty line.
Right.
That means that you have people that have been, 5 years ago, were considered successful mm-hmm. and doing well and prospering, and they had time to go play some golf, to go play softball, and do the various things that they do, and pretty soon, that economic creeping, insidious cancer climbs up that ladder. And as each person is caught up with, in other words, as the economy failing catches up, we've got 20,000 people a day that are going from wherever they were on their ladder of progression falling all the way down and grabbing hold of that bottom rung and hanging on,
mm-hmm.
and they're at the point where the only thing that they can think of, the only thing that they can do, they aren't going to think about, how is my freedom being challenged? Had I better go down and do something about that right. that congressman that voted the wrong way? No, they don't give a rat's butt about any of that stuff because they're hanging on the bottom line rung of that ladder. And so what you've got is exactly going on in a more sophisticated, mundane way that doesn't seem so atrocious as the story about the children that you just told.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, it's happening to grown adults and full families daily in this country. Because no matter how far we're up on the ladder, when that juggernaut that's rolling toward us and rolling over us catches up with you, you're down to that bottom rung, and it doesn't make any difference what you did yesterday, the day before, how successful you were, how much education you've got. We've got kids coming out of school, graduating at high levels within their classes that can't find jobs because there are no businesses left to give them the jobs to work. And so where are they? They are no better off.
They're in debt.
Than the guy that's standing on the street corner, propped against his crutch, with a cardboard sign painted in his wife's lipstick that says a little bit of change will help.
Mm-hmm.
How much difference is there between that man and the baby in the crib and the mother that's feeding her children and those of us that are falling below that line? So here's the deal. If pork is disappearing, that's only the tip of the iceberg. When we get done dealing with what's going on in this seventh year of the worldwide famine in this country, mm-hmm. where we have a food situation we've never experienced or imagined before, the only chance that people have is to put in a supply of food while they can still afford it, because the food that you're buying right now, the only reason you can still afford it is because it was purchased by the processors from last year's crop that they could still afford to buy the raw materials.
Right.
When those processors hit the October of this year and November of this year, new pricing on the current raw materials, it's going to be a whole different ball game. And you think that 20,000 families a day or individuals a day falling below the poverty line is serious? You ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah.
It's going to be about as insane as the idea that $3 off of your phone bill is going to provide somebody a phone. And who's paying for the services month to month? I don't know about that. We better check that out. If that aggravates you, $3 worth of aggravation, think about when all of these people that can't afford to buy food, that have been committed to that they'll be provided food, when your food is taken out of those huge warehouses and redistributed, and you're standing in the breadline behind
the people who already know the system.
The members of already,
exactly.
The people are already members of the system, and so you've got just a really interesting situation.
Yeah.
So
I am not looking forward to it. It's sad that it's come to this. It really feels like we're on looking over the edge of the abyss at this point.
But here's the law. Here's the law that some of the people that are preparing, what do they call them? The
preppers?
Preppers, yes, the preppers. Some of these
thinkers.
Some of these wise people that are preparing realize something. Here's a fact. If we do not learn from history, we are condemned to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, throughout the history of mankind, good times have been followed by bad times, which are always fortunately followed by good times again. And so many people right now are complacent that the juggernaut of economic disaster and cancer haven't hit yet. While they're sitting there in their complacency, it's climbing up the economic ladder, and as the people are falling down to that bottom rung, it reminds me of a cartoon I saw one time. It was a bunch of sheep, and they were going toward a cliff, and they were falling over the cliff, and they had all these stricken looks on their faces as they fell off the cliff, and there was one little black sheep right in the middle that had a cartoon bubble above it that said, it was pointed the other direction, and said, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. And you see, there are few people in this country, there are millions of them, but relative to the population, there are few people that realize that if we take control of our dependencies right now, while we still can, and get a supply of food, put in a supply of food, and work to be able to eke out whatever we can to set aside some food right now that's storable, then they have a chance to survive. The people who do not pay attention. When these prices hit, this year on raw materials, and they start to trickle down through the processing of the foods to the point where It shows up in the grocery store at the price that you're going to have to pay just to keep that processor in business. They have to stay alive.
Yeah.
We think 20,000 families dropping below the poverty line is ridiculous. You ain't seen nothing yet.
And can you imagine 20,000 families? I think if there's four people in that family, that's, you know, 80,000 people a day. It's scary because that's the size of a small to medium-sized city.
There you go.
Every day in America.
Yeah.
And there's nobody out, you know, Obama is providing them food stamps to keep them happy until this election. And what happens at the end of the year and he decides to either jerk the food stamps away or the prices climb so high where the food stamps don't buy anything?
There you go.
You got two scenarios.
There, you know, something that a lot of times people don't realize is you can stand there all day long. Back when we had phone booths, You can stand in a phone booth all day long with 24 cents. And the point that I'm making is you can stand in a bread line if you have to pay for food. You can stand in that line to get the food. And if your money isn't enough to buy the food, then you might as well not have any money at all.
Yeah.
And so what we've got is a situation in macrocosm, similar to the one you described with the children. We haven't discovered it yet. We're just the frogs in the cool water That's getting pretty hot for 20,000 families a day, or individuals a day, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's getting pretty hot for those folks. But if you think that $3 on your phone bill is an aggravation and it's unfair, and it might be, you might even feel like it's stealing from you. Can you imagine what you're going to feel like if you're still employed and you end up in a bread line and there's no food?
And how many major supermarket chains are there now? Maybe 10, 11 In the country?
Yeah.
And they're all, you know who's on that, their list, their call list. They
go.
Say, hey, we need you to start shipping over to this place, this Walmart Supercenter. And we're going to keep the food here and then distribute it out. That's when it's going to get controlled. And they've got that situation. It's all centralized.
Yeah.
All centralized all over the country.
Well, you know, the problem that we have is, you know, they say that people get the government that they deserve. I'm not going to go into that one.
Yeah.
But they also say, My daddy was 96 when he died, and about 2 years before that, he already had discovered that I was in this insane thing called the food industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, son, you know, he was born in 1887. We skipped a generation. He said, son, the problem we've got, I've been through two depressions, what they call the Great Depression and the one before that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we've got right now, and this was 20, 30 years ago, the problem that we got right now is that we've had it too good for too long.
You get comfortable.
The problem that we're going to have is before we get enough families in this country with a 2x4 of reality across their foreheads, we're going to have to sink so low that the masses that are buying into this idea that it's all free and those rich guys, you realize we did some calculations the other day, which is interesting. 1/8 of the population of this country is supporting the entire country. I can prove it. We can go through that. We don't have time right now.
Wow.
1/8. You're one of them. I'm one of them. And we've got a lot of good people out there that are listening to us that are part of that. The still employed.
Mm-hmm.
But when you consider half the population in some way or other works for the government, half the population in some way or other is being supported for their groceries. I mean, you put
it's not another half left.
Yeah, you run out of halves pretty soon.
Yeah.
So the message is very simple, Rob. People have to realize they have to look in the mirror when they get up in the morning. I know that there are a lot of people that won't. They're just great. They say, boy, all I want is my telephone. I'm going to vote for that man. Mm-hmm. All I want is to make sure that I can get my food stamps, and I'll vote for that man. But there are some of us who realize that that's going to go down the tubes. And we've got a historical experience of how long it takes to get back once we give up all of our freedoms and we are bought. Mm-hmm. And that was the Israelites in their slavery to Egypt. Took them 400 years to get out of it. And everybody talks about Joseph, the great storer. Mm-hmm. Very simply, after he stored for 7 years, they got to the first year, and all the Egyptians came around. They said, "Hey, we ain't got no food." And they said, "Got any money?" Mm-hmm. They gave them all their money. Second year, "Hey, we ain't got no food. You got any cattle?" That means all their livestock, mm-hmm. not just cattle. Gave them all their cattle. Third year came around. They said, "Hey, we ain't got no food. The only thing we got left is our land and ourselves."
Thank you.
And in the 47th verse, it says, "I have bought you this day and your land for the Pharaoh." Now you tell me how far we are from that statement being made here in the United States. Mm-hmm. "I have bought you this day." And from the time that they were bought, it took them 400 years to get enough people who could get enough food in their belly so they could start to think and start to feel and start to say, "Wait a minute, this stinks," and actually rebel and get away from the system 400 years. And they didn't have the control mechanism back then that systems have nowadays.
No, they didn't have unmanned drones flying over ready to kill people. They didn't have our telephones tracking us.
Well, there you go.
They didn't have the TV pushing messages constantly, or the food stamps, or anything else. So, wow. So I guess your best advice then is to get food, get it now before it goes up, essentially.
Doesn't take brain surgery, Rob. Doesn't take brain surgery. All it does is take someone with ears to hear and eyes to see and listen to what Alex and you guys are putting out and just stop and think. Mm-hmm. Stop and think. Where are you? You're following your dreams and your hopes and your wishes, but any one of these circumstances that we listed here earlier will put you right back down on that bottom rung. And when you're there, there's no other thought. And the problem is that people think that there's a free lunch. And there's always a price tag to everything.
Yeah.
So when we look in the mirror in the morning, all we can say is it's not up to them to take care of us because there's a price tag. You ask any family that's gone on welfare, any of the welfare programs, and see what they have to sign
away. Is it worth it? Ask them if it's worth it.
Ask them if they dare make more than a certain amount of money, if they try and pick themselves up by their bootstraps, if they dare make too much money, then they'll lose what they've got. So they don't dare progress.
Or if they're a single mother, if they get married, oh, we're going to take it away. You know, so it keeps them in that, it keeps them right in the box.
There you go, right in the box, hanging on to the bottom rung of that ladder. Mm-hmm. Until you get that rung taken care of, you ain't going to climb no further.
Yeah.
But here's the way that we deal with it. We look in the mirror in the morning and we say to ourselves, if it is to be, it's up to me, because freedom is never free.
Amen to that. We didn't even get to your book. That's coming out this year, the end of the
year.
That's
okay.
And the title of it is "It's Not Your Fault," and it's going to come out, what, November or January? That was amazing.
Yeah,
I hope you end it with that statement, because if it's up to me, what is that again?
If it is to be,
it's up to me.
That's freedom great. Is never free.
That's it. Wow. Steve Shank, better words have never been said. And let me tell you, that was very informative. I hope you got something out of that out there watching the show. This was a little unexpected. Steve showed up today. He was in some travels, and this was one of the rungs on his travels through the United States. Basically, he's going around warning people, you know, get your bed prepared, because whenever it comes down, you don't want to be the one standing in that breadline, because then you're at the mercy of the people who are basically controlling the ladder, and they're going to knock you down. So with that, we're going to end today's October 3rd, 2012 show. Thanks to Steve Schenck, Amber Lyon, and the rest of the crew. Some interesting day today. We sent all the reporters out, so we're going to have a whole bunch of new stories that we're going to be putting out in the next couple days, and it's really good to be able to send reporters out and work on the show at the same time and not feel too crazy, too much like a chicken with your head cut off, but we're getting it done. Big thanks to Marcos out there and John Bound, and who helped me put the show together. And with that, we will see you tomorrow. Once again, if you want to subscribe, you can go to prisonplanet.tv. We have a 15-day free trial. It's less than $6 a month. And you can share your passcode with 5 other friends. So that little graphic that popped up was it kind of explains it all. And then you guys can get the information, spread it out to your circle, and therefore we can all pull ourselves up this ladder of life and truly make it a country and a place and a society that we want to live in, and where everybody can succeed. And if they want to, they have to look in the mirror, though, and make it happen, because nobody's going to make it happen for you. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night.